harder than you do. Legendary Sports Talk. Melnick in the Afternoon, TSN 690.
Welcome back. It is hour number four on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690 with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Sergio Omesso has been in studio with us all afternoon. Thank you, Sergio. Claude Julien, Mark Bergevin, met members of the media, and we carried it live between 4 and about 4:50. Also had Tony Marinaro and Dan Robertson and Sean Campbell with us earlier from Brossard, where all this went down.
Honnêtement, on a échoué parce que nos attentes étaient beaucoup plus hautes que ceux qu'on a aujourd'hui. Mais ça reste quand même que moi, j'ai vu une progression dans le peu de temps que j'étais ici. Tu sais, de l'équipe, mais aussi, je te dirais, dans la chimie de l'équipe. On a vraiment développé une bonne chimie qui regarde bien pour le futur.
When you pick in the 20s, years after years, it's hard to find that piece, that core piece, unless you get very lucky.
Now, what's it like in New York?
Will you allow yourself to think about how far you can go, well, at least now?
I'm going
to
have a glass of wine tonight, and maybe two. Never wait. But starting tomorrow, we've got it. We know it's either in Boston or Ottawa.
So how about that? It's the Rangers and the Ottawa Senators. And the Washington Capitals had their hands full eliminating the Toronto Maple Leafs. That was fun while it lasted. Huh? And we'll get a replay. Washington and Pittsburgh in the East. We'll get to the West a little bit later. Garland Jeffries, Friday, May the 5th at Club Soda. Every Monday at this time on Melnick in the Afternoon, we welcome award-winning writer and broadcaster Michael Farber. How you doing?
I'm glad to be with you on Overreaction Monday.
Yes, let's please rename it from Habs Postmortem.
You're no kidding. I'm in Toronto right now, and the Leafs are eliminated in six games, and people want to have a parade. And in Montreal, Canadians are eliminated in six games, and people want to jump off a bridge. It's absolutely remarkable with the reactions in both cities.
Actually, Michael, let me try to correct you a little bit. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't want to jump off a bridge. I think they want to push a couple of people off a bridge.
That may be so. But I'm sitting here in the airport wondering how Austin Matthews is going to win the Conn Smythe. I swear. I mean, he's the greatest player in the history of the game, and it's absolutely amazing. I was, as I went to Dorval yesterday, I counted about a dozen people who said, "Got to trade Price." And I'm thinking, really? Don't you have to sign Price? Now I've got to trade him. And, I guess that was tamped down today by the goalie himself, a man of relatively few words, and made it very clear that his future is in Montreal. And I think people should just take that along with a Valium and calm down.
Some sage advice from Michael Farber. And as Sergio pointed out just before the break, that's the one thing you know with Carey Price is usually, not the case in this series, usually you have the better goaltender on the ice, and he's going to put you in a position to win a game. Now they got to score. They got to figure out how to score. That's a general manager's job. I thought it was his job when he came here 5 years ago to find some offensive talent. And here or there, Radulov this past year, that was a good move. But he's still in search of that elusive centerman.
Well, boo-hoo when you draft in the 20s year after year. You know, you look at some of the players, the young players on Pittsburgh who've made an impact the last couple of years. And again, Pittsburgh is not a team drafting high. But when you look at the Crosby line and he's surrounded by Gensel and Sheary, you know, smaller guys who are talented offensively, and Ryan Rust playing on the second line with Malkin and Kessel, they're out there, and they have to do a better job of identifying and developing these players. And what we got at the trade deadline was we got a team that's tougher to play against. Ott Martinson and
King.
Right. Guys who are essentially non-factors. Teams that are really tough to play against get scoring from many places, all four lines, who bury their chances on the power play and who draw penalties, force teams to foul them. Those are the teams that are really tough to play against, and it's nice to have an energy line, but when you're fixing that part of the team, and we've talked about size, and yeah, it's probably a good thing Montreal has some bigger players, that's not the answer. This is a team like a donut, big hole in the middle.
One of the questions that wasn't asked today, and I was somewhat surprised, again, because they chatted for close to 50 minutes, and I'm not saying this is a difference maker at all, but again, considering what the Canadiens' issue is, and Sergio, you've seen him play a little bit, they didn't bring Charles Hudon up. They didn't give him an opportunity. Like, did the organization just not think he's an NHL player for a team that desperately lacks offense? 2 years in a row, back-to-back, real strong years in the American Hockey League. You see the Leafs bring up a kid from the American Hockey League, Kapanen, and he has an impact. He doesn't look out of place.
François Gagneau asked the organization a couple of times about Charles Hudon. And you know, when he's down there, and he wasn't he on the All-Star team, too, down there? And he's an offensive guy. And even when Desharnais was here, you know, Charles Hudon never got a chance. And for some reason, he's never the guy that they call up. In case, you know, there's two or three guys before him that get called up before he even comes. So, and he answered the question today about, is there any centerman? Someone asked him.
That's why I mentioned that.
Yeah, there's any centerman that's ready to come up. And he said, no, not right now.
Yeah.
So he's definitely not ready to go.
Michael?
Yep.
I don't think there's any doubt. Oh, you want to jump in?
No, I don't know enough about you, Don. Okay. I've seen him play a little bit. I can't really talk about it.
Okay, I don't think there's any doubt that if Nathan Beaulieu isn't gone, he's on his way based on being scratched and Mark Bergevin basically putting it on Beaulieu and Galchenyuk when it comes to not developing, not being further along here at the end of this season. Galchenyuk, they got up. Obviously, there's a lot to like about the player and his talent. Nathan Beaulieu is Sergio believes he's gone. I don't know. Would you? What happened here? Was he ever really a top prospect, or maybe was he overvalued?
No, I thought he was going to be a real good player, and I thought especially a power play guy. They didn't seem to like using him there. They found him unreliable. I'm not sure that he will develop further in this organization. Galchenyuk, I don't know about. I do look at the work that Claude Julien did with someone like Brad Marchand, who required so much of his time in Boston. Now, different personalities, different styles of games. But Julien has a great way of communicating. It's one area that is far superior to Michel Therrien. In fact, people who know the team far better than I, and Sergio, you're one of them, not only was I told that the communication between coach and player was better with Julien, that their intercommunication player to player was even better because the work atmosphere, the environment was better. So why not give Julien a season with Galchenyuk, who clearly has some offensive upside, if you need to score goals?
So that's one area is Claude Julien having this team from the beginning and what kind of impact he can make on specifically a player as important right now, the way this team is structured, as important as he is, whether you like him or you don't like him, whether there are elements of his game that you really like and elements of his game that you don't like, is Alex Galchenyuk.
Yeah, it's definitely the job, sorry to interrupt, is if Claude Julien right now that it's going to be his number one focus. Coming up in the season to get him to play better defensively so he can have the trust to play him regularly back at center eventually with good players, not with third, fourth line guys, with good players that he can give and go to make plays to create offense. And so we'll see how that goes because that's a, you know, that's something that they desperately need.
Let me make this point about coaching. And sometimes we see coaching changes and an immediate bump from teams. But coaching over a long term can matter when someone's an elite coach. Mike Babcock's a great example. When he took the job a couple years ago, I suggested to him that he will be judged how well he can coach up guys like Gardner and Kadri. And he said, yeah, and Bozak, and he went through a couple others. Has there been a more improved player in the league than Kadri? Babcock really turned him into something. He turned him into a sort of a version of Ryan Kesler, a player with some offense who's an absolute pain in the butt to play against, as Alex Ovechkin can attest. So if you have an elite coach, and I do believe that Julian is that, you have to give him some time with some of these players, and let's see how he does.
Yeah, the one thing that, and you see Kadri when he was there, and if he's forced to be a number one centerman, and it's tough to be, like kind of like Dano. He's in a position that he's forced into, does a great job. He works hard, goes up and down. And even for Alex, I could see him, if there was another centerman that would take a lot of the pressure off. So they end up getting Matthews, and then they have Bozak. So, you know, he could just play his game. It makes such a difference when you have that support where it's not all on you. And I think if Alex can get that, if the Canadians can get that, it would make his life a lot easier too, and the whole coaching staff also.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see after he meets with his assistants tomorrow who remains on that coaching staff. Because he's going to want to bring in his own guy at some point, right? Claude Julien, every head coach is given an opportunity to bring in his own guy.
Yes, and I know that, you know, I see Claude Julien and Kurt Muller talking a lot together on a lot of things. So I don't see anything happening there. But after that, that's a different story.
Michael, how do you see what Ottawa did and how it ended with Clark MacArthur, of all people, winning it for them? It's just an incredible story. It's like one after the other, these storybook endings for the Ottawa Senators. Do you think, I don't know, can they keep this going against Washington? I'm sorry.
Well, they would get the Rangers.
Yeah, it's the Rangers.
Can they? Yeah, I mean, you and I discussed this and came to the same conclusion. Montreal, New York was a toss-up series. And essentially it was. Pacioretty scores on that breakaway. Maybe we're looking at Montreal moving on, game five, third period. Ottawa, MacArthur was basically essentially wandering in the darkness for 2 years. And what he did, drawing that penalty and scoring the winning power play goal, you know, it's really the feel-good story of the playoffs. If you discount Anderson in goal. I mean, Craig Anderson, what he went through with his wife, taking time off, it's absolutely remarkable. But even more remarkable than that is Erik Karlsson, who, to my way of thinking, was the best player of the first round, saying, oh, I've got two hairline fractures in my left heel. I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, he might have as well given the world his PIN number. Or put his cell number out on Twitter. I mean, nobody talks about his injuries. But as Pierre Dorion said today, on the eighth day, God created Erik Karlsson. He's been absolutely remarkable.
I think a lot of us saw the play where he was hurt, where he smacked the back of his skating into the boards. And I think it's kind of refreshing. I mean, everybody knew that Gallagher's hands are broken. So what?
Right.
So you get slashed on the hand. So what is somebody going to do? They're going to slash Erik Karlsson on the back of the skate now?
Well,
in a protected skate?
Everyone knew about this. He actually broke it against Philadelphia late in March, blocking his shot. And this is one thing I don't understand. Maybe Sergio can help me. This year there was a ton of praise heaped upon Erik Karlsson because he was a shot blocker. I mean, to me, this is like Albert Einstein doing that kid's homework, math homework. Really? This is what you want this guy doing? Yes, in certain situations, you absolutely do want him to do it. But most of the time, I don't want Erik Karlsson blocking shots. It almost seemed like an affectation more than anything else. And I would not recommend it, given the rate of injuries that especially defensemen suffer from blocking shots.
Dan Girardi is your shot blocker. Right, yep. Sergio, that's the kind of guy you want blocking.
Yeah,
Hal
guy,
Gill was
or or Yemelin or guys like that, for sure. Your number one offensive guy, especially coming in from the back end. you know, we were told to move out of the way, which was fine by me when Al McGinnis was winding up, because even guys used to joke around, oh, those wood sticks, you wouldn't be able to shoot it as hard. Well, he still shot it over 100 miles an hour, so it was fine by me to move over. Up to the goalie to save it.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around all the overtime goals games between Washington and Toronto. Washington did manage to survive. Braden Holtby recovered his game just in time. How do you initially see, as we wrap this up, Washington-Pittsburgh?
I kind of like Pittsburgh, even though they enter as the underdog. I thought early on Washington looked very nervous in that series. But they were threatened. They held it together. I was impressed. Backstrom always impresses me. I think Holtby is probably better than Fleury. But yet Pittsburgh has found a way to win without Letang. And this should be a terrific series. And some people lament the fact that it has to be in the second round. I'm not one of those. My view of hockey was the best I've seen was in the 80s, certainly in the playoffs, when teams needed to fight their way through the division. I mean, we all remember Boston and Montreal and Quebec and Montreal, and it was going on out in the Norris and in the Smythe as well. What the league really needs is one more team and balance out everything so there are no more wild cards, so the Canadians don't have to play a tanking New York Rangers team who cruised into that wild card spot with nothing to play for. They were in a tougher division. So that's how I see it. But I'm just looking forward to the hockey. Remember at the start of the year, I picked the Tampa Bay Lightning to win the Stanley Cup. So I got nothing to say.
Thanks for reminding that something that we hadn't remembered. But it's good of you to point that out, because this whole prediction game is ridiculous.
Well, if Stamkos doesn't get hurt, that team would have been dangerous if they made it.
Yeah. Well, that's why you picked them, right?
I know.
Yeah.
Well, they got a lot of skill.
Yeah. Once again, it proves, Mitch, I know nothing.
And that's why we talk to you every Monday. We love you for knowing nothing. Thanks, Michael.
Fair enough. Take care.
Yeah. And maybe when he comes back and that Jacques Cartier bridge is lit up the way that it's lit up, there won't be too many bodies floating underneath it.
You got to give credit to Montreal. I mean, they came at us hard. They competed real hard. At the end of the day, it was a hard-fought series. Our goaltender made some timely saves, and we were able to get it done.
There was a time when a man like you had a private valet to dress him, top to toe. You wouldn't leave the house until you looked like a gentleman. Now, there's Jaff Pret-a-Porter. From boys to men, they'll